Hello and welcome back to The Dive, season 8, episode number 2. We do have a regular episode for you today, but first, just really want to thank everyone who has worked on the LCS and The Dive in particular that got let go. There was big news, right? Let go of 11% of the workforce. And we knew a ton of really good people. So it's definitely been a big, crazy week.
Yeah, I mean, it's really sad. Like, we've both been at Riot a super long time now. I initially got hired in 2014 at this point. You were there even before me. So you've been here over a decade. Even just on LCS, I'm starting my 9th year of LCS. So a lot of these people, you know, I've worked with, I've known for like a decade, right? So it's just straight up really sad to see a lot of these people, you know, go. Even our producer for The Dive got let go, which is really, really sad. So these are a lot of people that, you know, I loved working with, have a lot of respect for, you know, and you know, wish them all the success because they did contribute, I think, massively to what The Dive is, to what LCS is, to what Riot is. So it's definitely been a really sad week, but, you know, we're going to try to obviously figure things out and make the best show that we can. So yeah, I mean, it's a tough week, I think, for everyone, but just trying to move forward as best as everyone can.
All right. In the interest of moving forward, the LCS is on the live patch. 14.2. We are changing. My favorite change is that they are killing the double support item. I have seen already, though, some threads popping up about supports having problems even without having the double support item, having problems with the penalty kicking in just from their own farming or not even farming at all. So I'm sure that there are some bugs to be worked out or maybe some little adjustments there. But the overall goal of removing double support item, I am very much happy with the direction with.
Yeah, that was some of the worst gameplay I've seen in a while. Just Senna running at me with her Trinity Force Light free and just one tapping me. So yeah, I'm gonna say good riddance to that.
Yeah.
If supports are taking a little hit now, you know it's for the greater good.
Yeah. we felt the pain, so there'll be a short duration pain for you just for now.
They also nerfed Bloodsong individually, the exposed weakness on it, because that was a big reason why it was so OP, is that it's like 12% increased damage when they hit you with that for melee, and then it was like 8% for ranged, and both those did get nerfed. There's a ton of systemic changes as well, like kind of beyond just the double support thing. It seems like across the board, they're kind of just like reducing the damage out of a lot of the items. You know, looking at a lot of items individually, items are getting nerfed. They're either becoming more expensive. They're reducing the proc damage. They're reducing the AP and the AD and stuff on a lot of these. And I was talking to Freak a little bit because I was playing some games with him, and he was just saying in general, they felt like damage on items was just kind of a little bit too high. Mm-hmm. And that too high of a percentage of champion's damage was coming from items, right? And that it was kind of like the game to me started to feel like it was getting into the territory of you're more defined by your itemization than by your champion, which like I'm not super opposed to, but that's always been more of like the Dota style of gaming than League of Legends, where it's like, you know, oh, that's a Storm Surge champion. You know what I mean? Like that kind of stuff felt like it was getting a little bit crazy, where you look at your death recap and like 30 or 40% is like runes and like procs and items. And
I mean, you saw AD LeBlanc is the biggest offender of this, and she did get nerfed pretty hard because she was abusing this, but you know, we're seeing people still play her like even after the nerfs, because one of my games, she was going in and autoing people for 1200 damage. Then you got IE, Trinity Force, Storm Racer, that what's that, Voltaic something?
Oh yeah, Cyclosword.
Yeah, all those. It's just, it's so front loaded. It's weird.
It's funny you mention it, because I literally just played a game with Bobchin on my team. Bobchin is a guy who started the whole AD LeBlanc thing. He's been a LeBlanc main for a super long time. That was the game where we beat XU, actually. And so AD LeBlanc, he was playing it then in that exact game, and he was destroying the Zed. So I was pretty happy with that.
Yeah, it looks seemed fine to me. I don't know.
As long as it's on my team, no problem.
Back to the point of item chasing. That has been a discussion for a long time. All of last year, it definitely was something where with patch to patch, it felt like everyone is kind of chasing after the OP item and what is happening. I still feel like there's a lot of really good changes in this patch. I really like this patch. They definitely did not hit all of the big offenders, like Profane Proxy as well. Lethality is in a very good spot right now, so Lethality is
good for the Lethality users.
Yeah, Lethality is very strong right now. And one of the things we said that we were intentionally buffing it to get players to play it, even though we already knew it was in a good place. Mm-hmm. And so the active for it right now is easier to use. It's only below a 50% threshold, and it got stronger. And so like full lethality builds are doing 700, 800 damage with an item proc, with a Tiamat active, basically.
I was playing that on Clyde. It's insane.
So it's adding, and last patch I was playing Briar lethality with it, and you literally delete people. Obviously they also made changes in this patch to lethality Briar, and I think those were very good to reduce that build and then buff up the Bruiser build. But back to the point of the items, there's definitely still a lot of really good ones. If you want to go right now, I would recommend on your team, get some lethality. Lethality's in a very strong spot. You should definitely play some, have somebody who's going to be a Liandry's user, either Liandry's plus Riftmaker, because Liandry's didn't get nerfed at all. Riftmaker only got 100 gold hit, which is still just as strong, just a tiny bit more expensive, or Liandry's into Rylai's. Any champions that have those combos are doing very good right now. Lilia is queen of the jungle, running around murdering people with this. Their brand as well.
Yeah, I mean, he got hotfixed.
Because Brand, they did a little thing where they upped the tick rate of his passive, and it had other tack-on effects where it was working with Liandry's and all these extra little bits of damage. And so we got to a Morgana state where, if you remember jungle Morgana getting massive monster multipliers, and then this mage is randomly the fastest clearing, best jungler, it happened again. You know, Brand is out here terrorizing people. This three-way flex champion mid support and jungle has just become a menace.
I was playing games with Flowers last night, and we were playing against a Brand jungle.
And is he Skarner?
Skarner. Oh. He was not having a good time. It was like, he's like, I can't even play Skarner. He was ready to throw hands at Brand.
What
players.
Can you play Skarner into? Like, no hate on Captain Flowers. Love the guy. I used to be a Skarner main, but that champion is so bad.
Like, hey, I'm playing a 47% win rate champ over here.
True. I'm playing a 57%. I've been spamming some Brand. It's way more fun.
It actually did make me start to branch back out. I had fun being like a pseudo one trick for a while, and I'm like, you know what? Might have to mix in some of these high priority champions back into it. But yeah, there are a lot of exciting changes. And some of them are even, you know, like increasing damage output, like the experimental hexplate was pretty nice. You just permanently are getting 5% more attack speed, and they took that 5% off of the overdrive from the ultimate.
Yep.
So you're just getting it more uptime on it, basically, for the extra attack speed.
I don't know about that item. When I first used it, I thought it was really good. Mm-hmm. I thought it was super cool because it's like there hasn't been many items that have like health and attack speed on it.
Yeah.
I think the problem I've been having with it is it has no like regular haste on it. It's only ultimate haste. And so like compare this to, I don't know, Sundered Sky or Cleaver or whatnot, and you're so slow. You have no haste at all. So I would like it if it got one of those, if it was more like Malignance.
Mm-hmm.
Gotta remember the real
name
for that.
The most overpowered item in the game.
Yeah, that, dude, Karma. I think that
Karma
on
this patch, that is disturbing.
But it's insane.
Back on the experimental hexplate, though, because I think this is a good topic. I think the users are just so specific. It's so good for Zeri, Nocturne, Trundle. Like, these champions are turbo right now with it. But it's not a generalist item. Generalist, because it's like you're saying, it's not regular.
But the Hexblade Titanic stuff on Zeri, like I've been seeing like Hexblade Titanic, Black Cleaver, it's back to the tank Zeri.
Oh god.
It does so much damage.
Why is she always abusing some creepy build every time she's played? Like she's so fast, and does a lot of damage. Why does she have to be invincible too? I don't get it.
It's just a ranged Mundo just one-shotting your team.
Oh my god.
She does really seem like the villain. I thought you would have been all over the Trundle split pushing.
Yeah, I've been trying Trundle.
Okay, because Trundle split pushing right now, he works really good. So good with the new Hullbreaker. With the new Hullbreaker, by the way, you can stack it up on the minions to five stacks.
Yep.
And then they'll just bop somebody for 10. Yeah, it stacks up on minions. And then you can keep it ready and then just go bop somebody. Your Q has 25 increased range on this patch, by the way. So Trundle even got more buffed. Trinity Force is so good with him. Titanic is so Nassus good. Hexblade is so
patch.
Good.
A lot of the stuff I like to play is really good on this patch.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy. I would also say there's some interesting changes. Like, I haven't heard that many people talking about it, but the ADTF changes are actually pretty big. I don't know if it's going to be popular or not. I've seen some people messing around, saw some high elo people playing ADTF top and things like that, because the TF passive now works on towers. So, like, they did that with Jax and stuff, but stack deck works on towers. It gives you more bonus attack speed now, and it scales off of AD. It didn't used to scale off of AD at all before. It now has 75% AD ratio on the E, which is the passive. And your card also has 50% bonus AD scaling on it as well. So it's like the ADTF is actually becoming pretty real. You are crushing towers on this. Like, I don't know. Is it going to be something that we show up in pro? Probably not. I don't think so. But like,
I would not be surprised.
It might, because I've definitely.
Top lane, you think?
I've already
not
seen.
Not top.
Okay, yeah,
not top lane, but I've already seen.
I think mid it'll get played.
I mean, people are experimenting with it a lot in high elo. I would also say, though, some of these buffs just work on AP Twisted Fate also. So some of these things are generalist and they're very slight.
Yeah.
But because regular Twisted Fate has a rapid fire cannon in his build anyway, these just make the regular build where you would build a rapid fire cannon later for the extended gold card range slightly better too. So I just think Twisted Fate is going to be in a very good spot.
I would be surprised if AP is still the build, because I mean, talking about what we were talking about with like the, you know, all the front loaded items, like, he's already a champion who was building rapid fire when every stat except the range was useless for him, right? And now it's actually good. I've seen it a couple times, and it looks pretty crazy. I mean, like, his W is an auto reset now when you lock your card as well.
I mean, it's just simply better than before.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. He gets more gold. He can actually
the gold
build AD.
Additional gold on crits is you double roll your passive, right?
It's a weaker roll though. So
it's weighted towards one.
Yeah. The regular passive is weighted towards six. The new one's weighted toward one. So when I've been seeing it, it's not actually that much more gold.
Yeah.
It's like a little bit, but
only on crits, right? So if you kill a minion with a crit, you're probably getting one to two more gold on average. But that's probably like most of the minions you kill before you have a lot of crit, right?
Yeah, I just think like the fact that it's an option now to build the way that, you know, items that synergize with rapid fire, which you already wanted, I think it's gonna be pretty crazy. You know, you can go like that same LeBlanc build, right? It's like Storm Razor, Cyclo Sword, Rapid Fire, Trinity Force, IE, and just one tap people. Like I actually think it's gonna be good.
Do you think he's gonna be too squishy with those builds though? That's my only thing, is that it's like LeBlanc works with this build because you're so mobile, right? TF, it's like, you don't have a dash, you don't have any of this stuff, so he was often going, you know, when he was playing competitive, he'd often have Azonias in there and things like this that would allow him to have some measure of safety. So I'm just kind of wondering, like, can you actually get away with, you know, you're talking about Storm Razor, Cyclo Sword, Rapid Fire, like, if that's your build, you've got no dashes and you have like 1,000 HD.
Yeah, that's fair. I think you'll be okay with your 800 range, 2 second stun, and I don't know, probably Fleet as well. Like, you're right, he will be kind of squishy, but I feel like it's okay because he has the extra range. But, I mean, we'll see.
Yeah. Regardless, these are very positive changes for Twisted Fate, regardless of your build.
Yep.
You know, AP is strictly better than it was before, and AD is now a real option. So people are going to have a very fun time exploring this. We'll see if there is any follow-up to it. Personally, the one I was most scared of in this patch are buffs to Karthus. Whenever Karthus gets large buffs, a lot of junglers always get a little bit scared. If Karthus becomes the premier farm jungle, then it starts to get very, very scary, especially with the changes to this season, the map layout.
He's killed six camps when you're on your third one. It's just like, all right, I guess I'm getting outplayed here.
I'm curious to see if we'll see it in LCS pop up quickly, because Karthus is a very pro viable champion as well.
Do you think these buffs are big enough to like to push the needle?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Definitely. I mean, already on day one data, he got decent improvement to win rate as well, and that's just regular
play.
Regular yeah, play of general population. Stuff, yeah. So, I mean, if the front page is to be believed, it all looks like almost a 4% rise. So that is a massive, massive buff.
I always have trouble knowing how big of a buff something like the Wall of Pain changes, right? Because it's like it goes from 15% MR reduction to 25%, which sounds like a lot, but I'm never sure. It's like how much of your damage is on the on people who are actually debuffed by that and stuff like that.
I think that's pretty big.
It sounds
it's not
big.
Even just your damage. It's your whole team's damage. Yeah,
exactly, because it's shred. Yeah. So there's so many AP carries right now. Because Landry's is so popular. So
I could see it for a team fight being pretty big.
Yeah,
I think a lot of those effects that do like. Random.
It's hard to know when I read that, you know?
Yeah. But I think those effects are kind of like, you know, the sort of under the hood, like sleeper strong effects. You know, Malignance has it as well, where you lower their MR, like Jarvan's Q lowers their armor. I think all those effects are super strong because, you know, it buffs everyone's damage, not just your own.
Yeah. My favorite change, though, are these nerfs to Storm Surge. Oh my God, I'm so happy. Storm Surge Burst was so painful to receive. Fizz actually got double dipped.
Yep, thank you, Riot.
Yeah, I'm like, you know,
still
what?
Getting one shot by him. Still getting one shot. It's okay.
Maybe another. Give him a third nerf.
So I'm super happy to see like a lot of these nerfs. Actually, I already mentioned the Briar kind of shift away from the lethality build, which is super frustrating to play against because she's getting in there and just like triple, you know, three-shotting you or something with a full combo in very short time period. The Rumble nerfs as well. Rumble has been all over pro play.
Senna unnerfed.
There are some new top lane.
I guess the support item in Bloodsong, I guess, are their first stab at that. I don't like playing against Senna.
Feel like Senna's giga strong even without double support item.
And as well, Seraphine is still really good as an AP carry bottom lane. As long as your bottom lane knows don't build double support anymore and you draft Sarah Seraphine, those things always get merged
one
in
of
my
those.
Head. Seraphine and Senna together, it's still such a crazy combo. You just build Seraphine as a regular AP carry bottom lane with Senna still going Bloodsong even though it's nerfed. I guess depending on team comp, you could opt to go with the defensive crown item. Whatever it's called, the Celestial or
Celestial Bulwark or something like that. I forgot what it is.
Some damage
like
reduction
that.
One.
It's the mini crown.
Yeah. If you're really scared about people jumping on you and the Bloodsong nerfs are too much, but yeah, there's definitely some good options there.
I think for other things before we move forward, Karma I think is for sure going to see pro play. Karma I think is so strong. When I've been seeing some of the mid lane Karma stuff with Malignance Rush, it seems absolutely insane. I also think Ezreal getting buffed means Karma Ezreal bot lane could definitely be back because both those champions got buffed, and some of the other bot lanes have just been comparatively nerfed because like the double support changes and things like this. So I feel like we might be seeing a lot more Karma in pro
and Ezreal for sure. I definitely agree.
I'm a little interested in what top lane is going to look like, because one of the picks that kind of surprised me in pro play has been this AP Udyr top or tank, I guess tank AP
any build Udyr top. Yeah,
because it's getting picked early most games, and it's one of those like, you know, neutralizing tank picks, but it doesn't seem like there's much that actually counters him. You know, your typical responses to those blind pick tanks will be some kind of scaling carry, you know, Gwyn, Camille, which did get buffed this patch, so maybe those will be better responses, but it's just the fact that he's not only tanky, but he has so much sustaining wave clear has just made it seem like no one's been able to find like a super good response to him.
I'm surprised people aren't playing Mord, because that's what I play into it when I see it get picked and it feels really free. I mean, maybe people at the highest level will just play it in a way that you can't bully, and then they just feel that they're more useful later because, I don't know, they're Udyr or something. But like, I feel like Mord has pretty good value in 5v5, and if the Udyr is just going to build full tank and have to like never fight you on the wave, you know, once you have a few levels, Mord has always felt like a pretty strong answer to me to some of the tank stop.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. Oh, one change we haven't talked about yet that is actually so huge is the stat shard changes.
Oh yeah.
Woo, in this season. Speed.
I mean, so the biggest thing I'm noticing with it is like you can't take flat armor MR for your lane counterpart anymore, which it's kind of nice in solo queue, because like You know, the most tilting thing is when they flex some random thing into your lane that you don't have the right runes
for. I just always take HP if I wasn't sure.
Yeah, yeah. Now you have to do that. And so I've been playing stuff like Elise, because I think maybe part of the reason why Brand's win rate spikes so hard is, like, you can't take MR shards. So any of these champs who have percent damages or whatnot, you know, the champs who really get stuffed by resistances are going to be a lot stronger. So I'm curious to see what that does. I think that could actually shake up how matchups go, just because you can't all of a sudden just take, you know, double MR runes mm-hmm. against this champ and neutralize them.
And people that rush flat pen, it actually is like advantageous to that as well, right? You can't just go like double armor shards against someone you know is going to rush lethality and things like this and some of the MR stuff that you're talking about. I had heard that these changes were because of bot lane stuff.
Really?
So mages bot have had super high win rates for so long. And I basically heard that ADCs never change, like on average, ADCs never change their runes. So they're just playing with armor runes every game. And the like hypothesis was essentially that because ADC players were like too dumb to change their runes, mages all had inflated win rates bot. So they're trying to make it so that like you basically can't take something that is useless. Every like it's only health or move speed or whatever. It's all generalist stuff that is supposed to be good for everyone. So this is what I heard was literally the reason that they were doing it, because they felt that the mage bot win rates were getting inflated by this. So they wanted everything to be on an even playing field, essentially, so that you can't have bad runes or stat shards, and then they can balance from there.
Right. That's interesting. It's funny. I was having a conversation, you know, on the co-stream. It's like me sneaking a double lift. So me versus two AD carries. And I was making the argument. I was like, yeah, I think AD carries have for sure the lowest game knowledge ever of the roles. And so I'm not trying to flame. Obviously, there are some AD carries that are
flame
good.
A little bit.
But not everyone. Mostly just them.
Yeah.
But it's because, you know, AD carry, it's such a specialized role, right? Like, you run really similar runes every game. You build similar items every game. You know, obviously there's like some champs are kind of different, like maybe a Senna and Ezreal builds differently, but for the most part you're doing the same thing compared to every other role, where, you know, as jungle you're playing tanks, assassins, mages, bruisers, everything. Yep. So I think you are right that like they don't check their runes. They're just like, oh, picking my champ, locking my rune page, let's go.
And I'm sure this isn't like pros, I'm sure, are changing their stuff if they're playing mages. This is talking about the average player, and that this was a problem for the average player in solo queue, and to the point where it was messing with win rates. Because I don't know if you ever look at win rate data much, but for bot lane, for like the last, what, 4 or 5 years, almost always the highest win rate ones are mages and bot. Even ones that have really low play rates, like Heimer and Swain and champions like this, have been super high win rate in like as an ADC or bot lane or whatever you want to call it, for like 4 years straight.
That is true. What were you going to say?
I was just going to tack on to, since we're talking about win rates and looking at the metrics that we balance for, sometimes you can come to these problems, and you see this a lot in like really big companies, where if you establish these metrics that you're trying to make all of your decisions off of, sometimes, you know, really smart people can manipulate or do artificial things to inflate or get to the metric that they want. And so sometimes it could be a problem with like the decision we were talking about earlier, where Profane Hydra, they know it's already in a good spot, but they want the play rate and the purchase rate of it to be in a certain spot, you know, probably so they can balance around it and so they can balance things appropriately. But it's they're doing an artificial thing and like then consciously over buffing it to mm-hmm. get to the play rate that they want.
And then nerf it later.
And I feel like that, like, you can follow the logic, but it does cause some problems along the way, because then other people have to deal with that, and then you have this like problem with time to kill. Oh well, there's this burst lethality item now that is also contributing to that and has a big, you know, low health damage.
I had a conversation with like a game developer recently on this almost exact same thing, where he was telling me how there's, you know, two kinds of designers for the most part. There's like the intuitive one and then the stats one, who are kind of at opposite ends of the spectrum with that kind of thing. And I've always been more on the intuitive side. Like, people love talking win rates with League, right? When you call a champion, are they OP? You know, are they 55% win rate, or are they horrible, like Volibear 47% win rate or whatnot? But to me, the reason why I'm so skeptical of win rates is the thing that I almost rarely hear get talked about is play rates of champions. Because I think popularity plays more into your champion's win rate than anything else. For example, if there's a champion that's just super popular and your champion has a good matchup into that, your win rate will be higher. It doesn't even mean you're better than every other champion. It's just you're good against what you're playing against so often. And so for that reason, I always take those stats with a grain of salt because, you know, I'm not saying they're useless metrics, but you got to look at it the right way. And just looking at it is like, you know, this number is higher than this number. A lot of times I feel like leads to wrong conclusions.
No, I totally agree with that. I mean, the data is all supposed to be like, it's not supposed to be the point. It's supposed to be like helping to establish a point or establish a question. And then you can use it to like consider all these different angles and try to, you know, come to a conclusion that makes sense. Right. I always do really like looking at it, but there's lots of cases where champions have a horrible win rate and an item has a horrible win rate, but it can be the best possible thing to pick in that game or in that situation, because you have to take everything into context. Right. It doesn't matter if, like, I don't know, Aurelion Sol top is the highest win rate top laner in the game, if your team needs a tank or whatever, right? Like your chance to win the game is going to be much higher by locking in the 46% win rate tank that rounds out your team's composition than it is going, well, Aurelion Sol at 55% win rate top with a 0.01% pick rate. Like, this is the best pick for the game.
Dude, something that I always think would be, I think it would be a really interesting experiment, but I would hate if it existed, is if there was a site, that
you
showed
want to experiment on other people.
Okay, so hear me out. A site that gave you win rate based on what skin is picked for a champion. Because it's not like people would start using that to judge how strong each skin was.
Oh,
in reality,
pay to win skin?
It could just be completely unrelated. Like, yeah, there might be some pay to win skins, but in reality, maybe it's just like mains like using this skin, right? There's like the Crime City Graves or the like Headhunter Rengar, they're just popular amongst the one tricks, not necessarily because it's better, but it would be one of those perception things where people would start believing. You load into a game, you look up win rates on skins, you're like, oh, my support picked the worst win rate. This guy's trash. Like, why would you not pick the best win rate skin? And then it just starts getting weird.
You gotta pick a, what is it, I Blitz or whatever? The Robo one?
They fixed it, but yeah.
Okay, that one used to be a pay to win skin. That was hard to see. There are some, that would actually be really funny. I would be super interested though, because most of it you would assume would be like explainable with that stuff, but I wonder if there would be some that would be really extreme on one end or the other, just because the animations are way easier or harder to see. Because some champions, I feel like when I play against the Arclight skins, for example, like Arclight brand, I feel like those animations are really hard to see. Like, they kind of blend into the rift a little bit, whereas others you feel like the circle is crazy obvious.
Yeah, I definitely agree on that point, especially with some that have globals. Mm-hmm. Because if you have skins that are just changing how the champ looks, then, you know, yeah, that's whatever. But if they change how either the animations or the indicators or spells or something look like, then, you know, like there's a Galio one where the Galio circle doesn't look the same and it's like kind of a soft red now. And the first time someone plays against that, they're like, what is this? Like, do I need to get out of this? And so I notice like people have a slower reaction time in getting out of it. Or there's a Shen one that when they're ulting on you, your screen doesn't do the same thing. And so the first time someone ulted on me with that skin, I was like, what is happening? And I didn't go in, and he's spam pinging me, engage, engage, engage. And I'm like, oh, that means Shen now. Oops, I guess that's different.
Yeah, the one I always like doing, I've tried to coordinate this on most LCS teams I've played, but nobody buys in, is I'm saying we all need to go the same color skins. Because, you know, a lot of the skins have
make it
projectiles.
More confusing.
Actually so annoying when you play against people who do that. It's like, man, there's a bunch of red stuff flying at me. What is what?
Which actually you have to run from, which is just like a random garbage, and which is a hook that ends the game.
Yeah.
There was a game that actually I actually thought mattered at Worlds. I called it out because Nightwave's using like Celestial Orianna, and they had another thing that was Celestial, and someone just got nailed by the ball. It looked exactly like the other projectile. You're definitely onto something there. It is hard to coordinate in solo queue for sure.
Coordinate the loudest possible skins. Yeah, it's like, is it Godhand Jax? There's one of the Jax skins that I swear when he pops his ult, it looks like his E is going because it has a swirling animation. It's like a swirling light around the top. When he presses his E is louder. But just initially, when a Jax walks out of a bush or whatever, or you're like, you quickly see him, if I see something spinning around him, I just think Counter-Strike, right? And I'm trying to get out of there. And it's like, so it's, there's some of those things where it's like, yes, of course, when you look at it, you can tell. But some of the ones with louder animations and stuff can be surprising.
I have that problem with Neela. I swear I cannot tell when this champion's W is going or when just some other water is splashing all over the place. Like, I really have no idea when she's using it.
That's also, because she gets played so infrequently, that's definitely an extra problem. Back on the patch, though, I just wanted to do one more thing.
And then let's jump forward.
Yeah, one last thing that I was super excited for is actually the Shen getting 4 base AD. It seems like small, but anytime Shen gets buffed like that, and this is a buff that you can use in the jungle, it makes me like really want to do Shen jungle again. And Shen win rate is starting to go back up. We do have a couple of players that play Shen, so we actually might see it in LCS. Whippo for sure. I already watched him play some Champs Q games even before these buffs, so he might pull it out. And then if he does, because I feel like he's our most experimental top laner, then Impact might do it again and bring that back out. So Shen and the globals coming back might be an issue.
I do know there's an AD breakpoint, and I don't know if this is it or if they just kind of like picked that for different things, but with last hitting the range minion with one auto without having to use your Q. So I'm not sure if that actually gets you there, but that can make a big difference. I can't remember what the actual breakpoint is, because you need to use your Q to do like a one auto kill on range minions after the tower. Otherwise, you have to like prep them all, which can be really hard in some of the bad matchups for them, because when you're prepping the range minions, you're just getting slammed because they're not in range of the tower. Mm-hmm. So if that actually is that breakpoint, it can be a pretty big deal. When you're hitting camps nonstop, the extra damage can actually
matter. Great for the 6 jungle Shen players out there.
There you go.
Woo!
All right, well, moving on. Week 1 obviously did happen. Was a lot of fun. I actually really liked the faster transition times when I was like not on broadcast, when I'm watching. I was like, whoa, this is fast. You get off cast, I go to the bathroom, the game's already starting. I'm like, oh my God, like this is, it's actually pretty nice.
Because this was so forefront in my mind, the first day I super hard trolled Rafa because I had in my mind, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to have to run immediately so that because we only have 3 minutes transition time. I have to go to the bathroom. I'm going to have to run. So as soon as they played the video that they had, the sound on tape, I put off my headset. And I was like, I'm going to the bathroom. And I started running away.
And it wasn't the break.
And it was just a shot that we're playing. And then it was going to come back to us. And Rafa had a spiel. And then I was supposed to toss to a video that he was in. And so I booked it. I'm like, out of here. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm on time. And I'm coming back and I hear him talking already. And I'm like, oh shoot, I went a little early. I felt so bad.
I was watching with Flowers and Kim, who's our manager, and we're all cracking up as soon as it comes back. Because like, first we're like, oh, is this a bit? And then Rafa just keeps going and we're like, oh no, Kobe. Kobe shows up with his badge on. Like, you're supposed to hide your badges up. We're just like laughing our asses off. Transition times.
I made that bathroom timing though.
There you go.
Nice. Yeah, I love the faster pacing of the stuff. You know, before when I was co-streaming, I could always play like an entire ARAM from game to game.
Oh man, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean now I can't, but it's totally fine because like I'd rather be watching the games. My only thing I'd like is more games now because like I think the pacing's great.
Dan's fast.
Yeah, it's short. You know, maybe we go to like, I've always been pushing for best of twos in LCS, like in competitive. And people are like, no, we don't like that. It's ties. But like, I think it's the way to go, man.
This might be all part of Mark's 5-step plan where we shorten it and we're like, oh man, now everybody wants more LCS. Oh yeah, you come begging for more. And then he's going to meter out some more in the future, maybe.
Yeah.
Now I'm just making stuff up for Mark.
That would be great. I would love more LCS.
Yeah, it would be fun. It was definitely a fun first week, though. I also just straight up enjoy so much that there was actually big changes for the game for the first time in, it felt like, a couple years. Because I just felt like I had been watching the same game for the last, I don't know, 3 years or something. And this time was actually really fun because it felt like a little bit more like you're discovering it. The patch also didn't come out pre-winter break. It came out after. So it had only been on live for a week or whatever it was. So it was fun just seeing, okay, like what did I think was going to happen versus what's happening, seeing teams kind of like discover things and figure out their own meta, what each team is going to do, what their reads are. Some are obviously really good. Some are obviously not going to work and so on. But like that kind of feeling of discovery to me makes the league feel fresh.
I love it so much. And I even like, you know, arguing about what stuff is turbo OP and broken. And, you know, yes, things specifically because we didn't have the testing of the normal like preseason are going to have a little bit longer of a period to
turns
fix.
Turns out Lucian, but, not OP. Yeah. 0-11, LEC and LCS.
People love getting baited by Lucian every time.
I swear Lucian is good, though. I swear Lucian is good. I know.
He's due.
I know everybody is anti-Lucian out. I actually feel like he is actually really strong still.
Turtle looked really good in the games they played, but...
We'll definitely get into that.
Here's the problem. Is that I think Lucian with a melee support would be better than an enchanter because...
Better than Melio?
Yes. Okay, here's the problem. You're committing two people bot to make one short range, super squishy guy who can chunk you and get a bunch of first strike gold and feel good about it. It's good dopamine. But that doesn't win you the game, dude. When enchanters are good, they're played with hyper carries. You know, an enchanter with Jinx, Kog'Maw,
Zeri,
whatever. These are the champs that when you play against, you're horrified. You're saying, oh God, like the game is going to reach a point where I cannot win. Mm-hmm. The game's not going to reach a point where he can chunk me for the third of my health and get 100 gold. Like no one's scared of Lucian doing that. So I think Lucian as a champion is not bad. I think committing an enchanter to him to have this really whatever combo, like I think the idea is you smash lane and you snowball the game, but that just doesn't happen.
Yeah. I mean, the mid game is supposed to be insane, and I have seen it be so insane. You know, in a lot of champions queue games, solo queue games that are at the top of the ladder, by the way. And I completely understand the pro player viewpoints. I know there's a lot of times where the whole community sentiment really gangs up on champions like this, and I'm. You know, I'm on the other side for once.
Pros are just too good at giving up the minimum. That's what I really think it is. Because if Lucian was it against TL the first Lucian game? I want to say from Turtle where like there was one that I cast where I just felt like he was crushing their bot lane. Like if you didn't have the scoreboard up, you didn't see anything else, you would have thought he was so far ahead, right? Like he's constantly going in, they're forcing out summoners. Every time Ignite is up, he's dashing in. I'm pretty sure it was against Core, and he'd like Ignite Core, he'd Ignite Yawn, he'd get them to 10% and they'd have to base, and you're like, man, they're getting trashed. They got one plate, you're like, okay, they're doing really good. And then you tab up the scoreboard, he was up like 3 CS. So like even though they're winning every single trade and it feels like they have so much treasure, like they just aren't actually getting enough. Like they never got the kill into the tower, the kill into the dragon, the kill into the now he bases and the next one means another kill because now he has extra gold, right? Like it never actually blew open. And I think that's to me the biggest difference between like Champions queue and solo queue and the top levels of pro play is that people are so good at just like, okay, this lane that would just get 4 kills in solo queue, now it gets like 10 CS or it gets 15 CS on a plate. And like that doesn't win the game, you know?
Right.
That's the hard part.
Definitely. And I think there are always going to be like what are known as scrim god champions, like just huge baits.
Jace and stuff.
Yeah, and Lucian's one of those. And here's how I always explain it to people is, you know, I've done a lot of scrims. The biggest difference between scrim and stage is if you don't know if something's going to work, you will do it in scrims and you will not on stage. And so, you know, when you have these matchups like Caitlyn Ashe, like these really high pressure bot lanes, right? Nobody wants to sit through like 6 games of scrims a day just getting like slowly harassed down. They're going to go for the all in level one. They're just going to keep trying to all in these guys and beat them because they don't want to have to give up the minimum. It's not fun. And, you know, obviously it's like a discipline thing. It's a limit testing thing. But on stage, people don't do that. And so I think a huge part of being able to recognize what the good metas are is being able to separate that. Say, okay, yes, we won this scrim. Yes, our Lucian got 20 kills. Is that actually going to happen? Like, what if our Lucian didn't get 20 kills? What is it going to look like?
Can you still win if he's zero kills and up 10 CS?
You know, are we getting ahead because our opponents were trolling or because this thing is like actually so oppressive? And I think that gets lost a lot. I mean, it's hard, right? Like, you don't really know what's going to happen on stage, but that disconnect is very real.
And the other thing is, Lucian doing pretty well in other leagues, right? Like in the LPL and LCK and stuff, and some of the other regions, it seems to still be doing all right. So like, you know, there is the argument that like, okay, it can still work, but you have to just be like godlike at it, or maybe the compositions being built around it aren't correct and stuff. So there's always that aspect of it too. Cause when you think of some of the other scrim champs, people are always like, oh, like, you know, Jace in the West is going to lose you the game internationally, but then they pick it and it looks pretty good. So
we need Sneaky back in pro play for just like 1 week to show people how to Lucian, because he plays Lucian differently from everyone. He's running like PTA, going like Essence Reaver, Navori, and he wins a lot of games and it looks really good when he does it. But then you get to pro play and there's like Bloodsong, First Strike, some weird stuff
rapid
going
fire.
On. Yeah, yeah. I mean,
I gotta say, Turtle was looking
every game.
Turtle was looking really good.
He was.
They did not lose because of the Lucian in that game.
He had some good plays. There were also a handful of plays of just running in and dying immediately.
And yeah, there definitely were. I believe
the question is just if he was playing a different champion, would they have a higher chance to win? Because I agree fully. It's not like that game was on him. He played really well.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying like Turtle, you're crap. I'm saying if you pick something else, you played at the same level, would you have had a better chance to win? That's all I care about.
The point I want to bring up is what a lot of people, especially last week, were playing into, which was a tank frontline and Sarah or Senna or all kinds of like healing and shielding. And so if you're going to go into, there's always this cycle where it's supposed to be like, oh, DPS greater than tanks, greater than burst damage, and then burst damage is supposed to be better than DPS by assassinating them. Mm-hmm. And so that's how you kind of get into the circle that we have, like that's in solo queue right now, which is like, oh, lethality is really strong, but then also that means that pure tanks are going to be super strong to the lethality. Oh, but then Leandre is going to be super strong at killing these tanks type of thing. And so like, I think it might, you have to pick it in a good spot as well, but it's definitely a very powerful tool. It's not universally powerful.
In LPL and LCK, 65.2% win rate, by the way.
There
we
go.
It's doing really well over there.
Get good.
Something in the water, you know?
LEC and LCS, what are you?
0-11.
0%.
0%. Not quite as high.
Yeah, I mean, the other champ that's kind of been running pro play, at least in LCS, has been at Zier. Like, that champ's nuts. I think I'm going to expect to see him permed because it seems like the only response is Corki, and that's not even like a counter. That's just someone who's not going to die on repeat when they get scooped. So,
yeah.
What do you think about the like Lichbane for Fleet Footwork type stuff that's showing up some?
I think Lichbane is a bait. I think Fleet Footwork's great. Just Nashor's Deathcap Void. I think you do that 99% of games unless you, for some reason, need a defensive item.
It's really interesting because I feel like more and more I'm seeing Cryptbloom just straight up replace Void Staff. Like Void Staff obviously has, I think it's 10% more magic pen and maybe 10 more AP or something. But Cryptbloom obviously has the ability haste and has the heal, and it's also cheaper, I think, on top, if I'm not incorrect. So the more, like at first when I saw Cryptbloom, I was trying to think, oh, who would this really work on? Do you have to have a bunch of melees to make sure you're getting value out of the heals? And I realized I was thinking about it incorrectly. Like the stats are just so good on that item that you don't even have to really even care about the proc. Like the proc is just this little...
The heal is so bad.
Exactly. The proc is just this little bonus throwaway thing. Like the stats are just really good. This item's just really good. And so I've been seeing more and more people, and I feel like more and more, we're just not going to see Void Staff. We're just going to see Cryptbloom built in its place. And it seems to perform better on like almost every champion.
You're totally right about that. I think a big part of it too is the lack of ability haste in mage items.
Yeah.
And so it gives you that much needed haste, because something that like, you know, Brand has been a huge pick, and I think it was Jhun, like XUN.
Oh yeah Shun.
Sorry.
He absolutely demolished.
Yeah, and he went cooldown boots on Brand, which I thought was, you know, like crazy when I first saw it, but then I started trying it in my games, because the problem is, you know, you're going Liandry's Rylai's, you have no haste. Your abilities take forever to come back up, but you get those cooldown boots and it actually feels pretty good. You know, Brand's never one-shotting people in a combo anyway, so you just have so many more spells, and then you get the Cryptbloom afterwards and you have like this good mix of damage and haste.
Especially the way that ability haste works, where the first ability haste that you buy is going to be the most impactful because your cooldowns are the longest. It feels so good to get a little bit mixed in from your boots. I've been a huge proponent of that in the jungle, avoiding the
But
normal ones.
We are getting all this stuff on live patch. It's going to be on LCS this week. We've been talking a lot about patch because it's kind of been a bit of a hot topic. But let's start talking about the standings. All these teams are going to be playing it, you know, this week in LCS. We're on 14-2. If you didn't know that, that's what it means. Comes out on Wednesday. You see it in the LCS on Saturday. The teams at the top, C9 as well as FlyQuest starting 2-0. We have four teams in the middle. Energy, Dig, TL, and 100 went 1-1. And then Shopify Rebellion and IMT ended up 0-2 on the first week.
There wasn't anything super shocking to me. We can start at the top and talk about Cloud9 and FlyQuest because mm-hmm. Cloud9 super team firing on all cylinders, kind of how most people expected. Except to me, I did feel like I thought Shopify was going to do a little bit better. But then if you look at the exact games, and we'll delve
into strength of schedule.
Yeah, we'll delve into their games as far as strength of schedule. But then also, you know, what was used in those games and them having to play into like Seraphine and Senna and stuff like that is I think where the nuances lie there. And I still expect this team to be pretty good. That being said, originally when it was announced, and Turtle performed super well in my eyes, they said that they were going to have the B-boy issues sorted out. So he should be here. I think we'll definitely check in with Revan and see if they've actually been able to get him here, if they've been able to practice with him, because that would definitely heavily affect my rating of this team. But starting at the top, Cloud9. JoJo and Blabber, no problems working together at all. I even looked up the stats. Both of them are number one and number two of any player in the LCS for gold difference for the early game. They are both performing well.
Kind of felt like they won all their lanes, won all their team fights, and
won all their games.
Yeah. The only thing that gave him trouble the whole weekend were the pauses.
Like Blabber ending after the pause.
I mean, what can you do?
I lost focus.
Yeah, I don't blame him. It's tough, but yeah, I mean, this team... No surprise there. Looking super good. I think, at least right now, it seemed like the only team that could actually challenge them would be FlyQuest, because they also were looking really good. You know, maybe not quite as clean as C9, but, you know.
And FlyQuest did play Immortals in Shopify, so much, like, true. You know, like it's easier competition, I guess. I mean, I think the C9 thing was even more impressive because they're playing against Energy and doing it, you know, though a lot of people maybe expected Energy to have a slow start because they weren't practicing much in the offseason. But Cloud9 is just going to be so interesting to me, you know, because the expectations are so ridiculously high. It's like they basically clapped both their games. They won all their lanes. They did everything right. It was the Energy C9 game that we casted with Doublelift, and Doublelift was saying, oh yeah, for the bot lane, it was Lucian Melio for Energy versus Varus Nautilus for Cloud9, and he described it as Lucian Melio wins levels 0 to 18. So like he's like, there's just at no point should you ever be able to do anything, and this should be like a massive advantage for Energy's bot lane, and Berserker and Vulcan ended up ahead. And so it's like, okay, well, if this other top competition, you know, is picking a lane that's supposed to be like this big counter to yours and you're losing anyway, then that's like really, really tough. So the expectations are so high for this team. I feel like not only do they have to win, they have to dominate for everyone to be like, yep, good job, Cloud9, because everyone thinks that they're by far the best team. The teams think they're by far the best team. Players think they're by far the best teams. The coaches think that. The community thinks that. So in a lot of ways, I feel like you become your own worst enemy, in a way, because it's like you have to not get too inflated in the ego and get lazy, or things could actually turn quick. And you also have to stay looking for ways to improve. Like, you know, if you're winning all your games, you have to stay hungry for that improvement, finding things that you can optimize.
Yeah, the biggest example that comes to mind, it was actually the 2020 C9, because you know, they completely smashed spring,
summer,
and then going into summer, they didn't even make worlds. Yeah, because the problem they were running into is they're winning with anything and everything. And so in scrims like we're talking about, where you're trying to actually get a read on the meta, if you just win every single game, it's hard to tell what works and what doesn't work when everything's working, right? So that's definitely something hard. It's actually straight up suffering from success. Like, you're winning too much. And the thing is, you know, the more you win,
you're gonna try
to not do it. But like, you're gonna get a little bit complacent, right? Like, you start expecting to win, and that's never helpful. It's gonna happen. It's hard to fight. So yeah, they're gonna need every team needs to, like, you know, lose some game to, like, you know, remotivate him. But
that's why Cloud9 is a 12.7 KDA superstar jungler sitting behind Blaber to keep him motivated.
Mm-hmm. I also, to give some hope to the fans of all the other teams in the league, I've heard from two teams specifically that they think Cloud9 is very beatable in scrims, and their win rates have gone up a lot from the very beginning of the season. So that also could be good news for Cloud9 getting better info from scrim and actually being able to learn things off of losses. But I think for the entirety rest of the league, it's really important to think that they are beatable and have the confidence to do that in your play. Because then you start playing way different if everyone's just checked out and they're like, oh yeah, Cloud9's for sure the super team, best team or whatever. Then you start doing a lot different things, not only in scrims, but also on stage versus them. And so I really liked the end of the week podcast that we had with Jat, Jensen, Dokla, and XU. Jensen talked the most confidently that I've ever heard him, like, trash talking people. He was like, Cloud9 is very beatable. I only give them like 5 to 10% chance to win the entire split. You know, he was feeling super duper confident. So I'm super hyped up for, you know, the matchup versus FlyQuest.
And we've had really amazing teams also totally flop. The Immortals, Huni, the Lucian Top stuff was famous for a long time because of that. They ran the league in the regular season and then, you know, got bopped out of playoffs pretty quick. So
by this guy.
Hey!
Yeah, I mean, it can happen, man. It can happen. You know, what was it? TSM, when they were on their crazy final streak. I think the final streak got broken by Immortals, by the Hakuo Thresh, right? I think that was because they had been to like 10 straight finals. I want to say it was that Hakuo Thresh year that actually broke their streak of making it to the finals.
But he was on a different team.
Hakuo was on Immortals, wasn't he? Am I saying the wrong thing? Was he on Clutch?
I feel like it was Clutch, but
it was a long time ago.
I feel like it might have been.
I remember the Hakuo Thresh game series though. Yeah. I have that stuck in my brain. And you know, TSM never banned it in the following games. He kept just slamming them. But like it happens, right? So Cloud9 can't get cocky. FlyQuest, the other 2-0 team. I think they had a good first week, but again, they beat Immortals, who I was actually shocked. When we did our power rankings, I don't know where you had them power ranked, but we had all the LCS power rankings. I don't know if you were on that.
Oh.
But every single person had them 8th. Like, so I thought they would be unanimously near the bottom, but I was actually shocked that everyone had them 8th. Not one person had them 7th in our LCS power ranking. So, like, that was crazy to me. That was actually more crazy to me than like, anything else on there. Because really? I didn't think they were, like, so much worse than everyone else. You know what I mean? And that's what it makes it seem like.
It's all a comparison, though, right? Yeah. It's like,
every single person has them 8th.
Yeah, it doesn't mean they're, like, you know, horrible players, but it means they're not better than anybody else.
Yeah. But for that to be unanimous, you know what I mean?
I mean,
it's like, damn, that's cold.
I mean, like, they've got a lot of players no one's heard of. They've got a lot of players people have heard of and, you know, not too excited about. So, I mean, really low expectations for them. Yeah,
well, we'll get there. But so FlyQuest beat Immortals and they beat Shopify. They came out, they did... I would say pretty well. It wasn't like crazy dominant. I know some people felt like things could have looked different in the Shopify one if Inspired wasn't there for that early gank to actually kill Insanity when he blobbed on the Zac, because he was actually in a pretty good spot in the lane before that, and I don't think Jensen would have been able to kill him off. So people were like, maybe if that went different, the lane could have looked different.
I had some words for Insanity's Zac.
You didn't like it?
No, I didn't. It was, I mean, honestly, early mid-game wasn't bad, but he came in my Twitch chat the next day, and he was like, yeah, I'm sorry about that Zac game. And when I was watching it, it's like, oh, man. I actually think solo lane Zac is really good right now. It's insanely strong. So I didn't even dislike the pick, but, you know, he's playing against Poppy. It's hard. You got to fight the urge to just jump in. It's so tempting on
Poppy
Zac.
Poppy Gragas said, want to ruin your life, I feel like.
Yeah. But the thing is, there's a workaround. You start with your Q. Like, you slap someone, and then you can, like, if you hit, like, a frontliner and you can flash, hit someone else, you can true combo. Like, you just do the slap, instant E, R, and you can start the fight that way, which is... You know, there's a lot of, like, really good Zac OTPs in solo queue, and not me.
Pretty good Zac player, not an OTP.
Not an OTP. No, I mean, there are plenty that are, you know, way better than me, and I see that a lot, honestly. Like, it's kind of rare to see them just go for the yellow jump, because if you miss, you're just in such a bad spot. So playing him like a hook champion using the Q, that's what he is missing.
Yeah. So you think you have to play like, but then is it worth playing in that situation? Like, it's different in solo queue if that's all you play, then you just find a workaround for whatever you're playing into. But like, is it actually worth playing mid lane Zac if the only way you can start a fight then is with Q flash basically?
I mean,
because it's like,
I wouldn't say it's the only way,
long.
But I think it's not so much that you can never jump in. It's just that you shouldn't always jump in. There are other
that
options.
Makes sense, yeah.
Because I went through this exact same learning curve where I was just jumping in and getting like
Blade
shit on repeatedly.
That, yeah.
And so then I started watching what other ones were doing and I'm like, okay, you don't have to. You just play them like a regular frontliner, just stand with your team and then use all your CC that way.
And I just really, especially, I remember during the draft when they picked a late Poppy and people were like, oh man, are they going to have enough damage? I was like, I don't care. This is so perfect at countering this team comp. They have Sarah Senafine, this combo that I just always mix the name of every single time. I can't stop doing that.
The Senafine.
The Senafine. Plus, they've got Poppy frontline, and I forget who the other frontliner was, but it was another big, beefy, like Ornn or something.
I think he played Udyr both games.
Maybe it was the Udyr,
I feel
yeah.
like I can
oh,
yeah, double check
was,
though.
It was the it was definitely the one of the two, and it's just like so good at shutting
Udyr.
It down. Talk about blocking E angles. I mean, anywhere there is a Poppy, it's just like this giant blocker in front, and like then you're forced to have the workarounds.
Inspired, so. I thought played really well. Also, that was kind of like one of the questions. I wasn't really that worried about it, but I know people are always like, if they take some time off, you don't really know how good are you going to be when you step right back in. Inspired looked really good.
Inspired is super good.
He's really good.
I've played against him. He's very smart. He is super confident. He knows how he wants to play. Puts out a lot of pressure. I think he's for sure, like, would I put him top two jungle with Blabber? Maybe. Like, he's up there.
Him
for
or
sure.
River, I would say. I feel like that's got to be the top three, right? Is there anyone else I'm thinking of?
Contracts is good.
Contracts is really good. I feel like Contracts at Worlds was, like, insane. Contracts during the regular season, I don't think.
These first two games, I thought, were both good for him.
They were good. But I just meant, like, you know, over the last while, it's hard for me to like put him on the same level as like Blabber and stuff in the LCS because I feel like they've been a lot more consistently high level in the LCS.
Yeah, for sure. Regardless of specifics, he's still
really
up
good.
There, right?
Yeah.
Like, Inspire's incredibly good, a very good jungler. And I think that their FlyQuest topside looked really solid. I think their bot lane still, you know, they're pretty green. I think that...
As expected.
Yeah.
It's Masu's first stage games, right?
Obviously. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. I think that if they went up against C9, that bot lane would probably be a pretty big problem for them right now. But, you know, obviously, long split, they can have time to improve, you know, get more comfortable and everything. So, I thought overall, not bad. But like you said, strength of schedule.
Yeah, that's going to be the big thing. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, coming into week two. I'm actually going to try to pull up their week two matchups. So week two, they play against TL and Energy. So I feel like this is actually going to be a really good test for FlyQuest this week, because I feel like both those teams, FlyQuest and C9, were basically everyone's top four, right? So this will give us like kind of a good barometer of where they actually are, right? We know they're better than some of the teams that are a little bit more towards the bottom, obviously. How do they fare against TL, against Energy? Because those are going to be, you know, the big competitors, I think, for people that are trying to chase after Cloud9 and take down Cloud9. So I think their matches this week should actually be really fun.
Yeah, one other... I guess it's kind of a concern for me with FlyQuest is it's a good and bad thing, but it's Whippo's play style is because, you know, he played his Olaf and after the game, he was feeling really good about it, saying, you know, like, make your own style. Don't follow what everyone else does, which, you know, I like that. I will say some players will get a little too carried away with that, where I think absolutely you don't need to just follow the meta, only play what everyone else is playing. But at the same time, there's a middle ground where you don't want to never be playing what everyone else is playing. It's not like because everyone's playing it's wrong. So I think you need to be a little bit careful that you don't try to like get too focused on, you know,
creativity
being unique,
for creativity's sake.
Yeah, exactly. Being like too edgy with your picks. I mean, obviously he's played a long time. I don't think he's going to go there, but it is kind of a concern.
Yeah, especially with top laners, because sometimes top laners, especially because pro play is very different from solo queue for them too. Sometimes you'll get this problem with like the main character syndrome where you're thinking the whole game is about you. And when you're talking about, oh man, guys, just give me some time to scale on Olaf, I'm gonna become unstoppable. And you know, sometimes, like a lot of the times, you're not the main character, and so you definitely, especially for a top laner, need them to play side characters, frontline character, whatever stuff.
There's this stigma about being a tank top player too, which top laners don't like. You know, it's like,
well, tanks are amazing right now.
You don't want to be known as a tank player.
Yeah.
But then you have people like Impact who are happy to play tanks.
And 3-6-9.
He just laughs his ass off at people who think that. It's just like, wow, like you keep being the main character and I'll keep winning. Like,
yeah. It was interesting. I was, a couple weeks ago, I was watching Bupo's stream and some people were asking about like some of these more niche picks and stuff. Like, oh, like, you know, are you going to bring out Riven against, you know, if you saw like a GP, we bring that out. It's a really good matchup now and things like this. And he was just talking about how you really, like, he feels you really have to balance practice when you're trying to be too, like, fancy with niche picks. Because if you put a lot of games in, like, to properly prepare it, you need to make sure you're getting value out of it, right? So it's like, with Riven or whatever, for example, he's like, okay, Riven is actually a strong champion right now, and you can get value from it. But if I put, you know, 50, 60, 70 games into Riven to prepare it, and it's only for this one unique situation, and then I get the one game, and then every other time the situation's up, it's going to get banned. Like, was that worth the practice versus just having those, you know, 60, 70 games, whatever it is, on, you know, this core of like meta champions that are going to be played almost every single week. So like there is that level of balance. And he did reference like one of the things that he thought that was worth with was like, he was pretty well known for Rengar top for a while, right? Where it was more niche, but like he felt like, oh, okay, in that case, it was like opening up bans within the meta for other champions and things like that. It was getting you advantages elsewhere. So it is always kind of interesting hearing players' thoughts on that. And like, it is a bit of a balancing act, right? Because if you spend all week practicing Riven and there's like a 5% chance you're going to play it, and then you're just like worse at Gnar or whatever, well.
Yeah, the Riven is a great segue into General Sniper.
Yep.
Who,
let's go to 100 Thieves.
I thought it was awesome. It was great fan service to pick Riven on his very first game.
And win.
He did win. I'm not trying to be a hater, but they didn't win because of his Riven. You know, he was going up against Impact on Udyr, and he was kind of losing his lane.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about the matchup. It's probably not great, but
I talked to Viper, and he said you're supposed to lose the matchup.
You are supposed to lose the matchup, probably. Yeah. But I think it's one of those things where, you know, being really good in solo queue, and, you know, he probably gets huge advantages in most game. He plays from ahead, but, you know, when you go up against someone who's just really solid, like Impact kept the wave frozen on his tower. He was getting big XP leads and whatnot. And then, like, Sniper had that one play where he went for, like, a crazy flash in 1v4 bush camp bot lane and just suicided. So there's definitely going to be some things like that where there's going to be some growing pains going from solo queue to the team play. So I think it was really cool he brought out the Riven. I think I'm going to need to see a bit of a better game than that one to really be set on that.
There were some oopsies, but I'll let you go, but really quick. You do have to also give them credit for some of the team play because they were behind in that TL game, and I do think they had some good TP plays to actually come back and coordinate with the team. So that I would say, like, was the positive side of that game for me, because obviously he got outlaned, he made some mistakes, but they came back through team play.
Plus, this one to me was also clearly they're playing a team comp that is triple melee the Seraphine and Karma like squad behind them to like bounce your Seraphine ult off of and have these like double melee solo lane carries, which I thought was really cool. And they're just trying to, you know, push that with what happened to be two specialty champions of both Quid and Sniper. Quid has been just spamming so much Yone. Yone's in a super good spot right now too, and Sniper happens to be Legacy Riven player. So that's why I thought it was really cool, because this was a case of not being like, oh, main character, but being able to use your main character in an overall, you know, designed team comp. So that's why I actually, like, this was one of my favorite games, because like you're saying, like, yeah, they didn't win because of the Riven. It was the team play, and it was because there were some opportunities that opened up.
Oh, 100%. And I definitely don't want to come off as, like, you know, a Sniper hater or whatnot, because, like, I really enjoyed
watching
it. That's
the title of this episode. Medios hates General Sniper. Yeah,
No, I mean, I thought his team play was good, you know, finding those flanks. And one of the plays that, like, I'm actually a broken record about is grouping up into a side lane and sieging. Like, I've seen probably more than any other team play, that is like the best way to throw a game, is by everyone grouping in either top or bot, like five
the TL
man
bot push that left.
Exactly. Yeah. Because every time I see it, I say it, and everyone who listens to my hosting probably hates it, but I'm never going to get over it. Like, you are completely stuck when you do that play. You have fully committed. You have to be able to go forward and pretty much win the game because you can't get out. And so if they have a flank on you, they get one word behind you, like we saw, a really good execution by Hundred Thieves, but they just get behind you, and then what do you do? Like, you're just flanked. You're surrounded. You're collapsed on. You have to be able to win a fight.
You're stuck.
Yeah, you're just completely stuck. So, you know, I think really good on Hundred Thieves to recognize. Yeah. TL did that, but I also think TL, you know, why you doing that?
Yeah.
I agree. I mean, exactly. TL obviously had some mid-late game problems and stuff that I think were like, you know, people are going to be critical of them because that was kind of their thing last year, right? Is that it's like, this is another team that had one win, one loss. I think TL was like a little bit more, okay, we're going to play the new patch and we're going to play creative stuff. We're going to do like, oh, we're doing, you know, the Ashjin bot lane. We're doing things that are more like new meta. They brought out all that stuff. And then that game did kind of get thrown, right? Because they were in the driver's seat. They get flanked by this good play from 100 Thieves. They lose that game. The second game they go into, they play as standard can be, right? They played triple frontline with Zarya Azir, I believe it was, right? And they just kind of like, okay, we're scaling. And they kind of played even, and they out-team fought late game against Shopify, I believe it was.
Yeah.
So, you know, like that's kind of the other side of it for them. But I mean, both these teams kind of like had like one strong game, one weaker game or whatever. Because the 100 Thieves other game, I think they played against Cloud9, if I recall correctly. Yeah. And that one, they just kind of like fell behind early. And then it felt like, I thought watching them that they got nervous and were overestimating how far down they were. Because it felt like one of those situations where you can tell the team thinks that they're screwed because they're just forcing every single play, even when it's like, it's already a 5% chance. But I didn't think that the game was, you know, in that bad of a spot. Where they just like full sent it. They just like all TP in for these plays, even though they weren't really set up that well, even though Cloud9 felt like they were in a better spot to actually win the fights, and just got absolutely crushed in those fights. So it was tough because that was the Blabbers and Zhao game, I believe.
Yeah, that was the one where he got bored.
He got a little bit bored after the pause, but before the pause, and honestly after the pause, he was still kind of destroying them because it kept feeling like they're trying to just full send it on, I believe it was Berserker's Varus, if I recall correctly, I think he was playing. I'll actually double check. But they were trying to fight past the Zin that was like super fed, and he was just killing their whole team.
Yeah, that was the game where Blabber went Shojin. When I first saw it, I was like, why was Varus. Are you going Shojin on Zin? His abilities don't do much damage. But then in team fights, he was doing a ton of damage. Like his ult was doing like half their health or something, just wild. Like that was
just fully stacked Shojin.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Yeah, and Shojin now, since we kind of brought this up earlier during the patch, where ability haste is shrinking in a lot of roles. It's hard to get for tank items, harder to get for some mage items. Shojin just having the flat 35 for basic abilities now, because you have 20 base and then you get the extra 15, is just such an injection of ability haste. It feels so crazy, especially on champions like that kind of refund the other abilities. You're just like constantly spamming them out. So definitely like the premier source for ability haste now too, to be able to just be that front line anyway.
So what do you guys think about TL then, right? Because obviously a lot of hype around them, you know, a lot of people even had them up to like second in the power rankings and stuff like that, because there's so many rumors about them crushing in scrims. They have Impact back, etc. What was the read on them for first week?
I feel about the same as I did. I'm still gonna have my magnifying glass on especially Umpty and APA to see how they're going to work together, how they're going to even play individually this time around, because to me, that's the biggest changes that Team Liquid made, is now they communicate in English, so it should be theoretically so much better and easier for APA to work with the team. He even stated last year during some of the controversy over picks, he was like, yeah, I play, you know, Jace or whatever other picks, but it's not good with our team because we can't communicate. And so that was used at times as, you know, an explanation for some of the restrictions. I feel like there are no restrictions. They have really strong voices on this team, I know for sure. Everybody except for Yon talks a lot on this team. So I think that might be one thing they have to filter through, is like, whose plan do we follow if there's four players with strong views of the game and strong plans? That might be something that we look at with this team beyond just the individual performances.
I'm in a similar boat. I think, you know, they were okay. They didn't really blow me away or anything, though. I think, you know, their game against 100 Thieves up until the point where they threw really hard was pretty good. But obviously, you know, that decision and missing the ward behind him to get TP'd on, unlucky, happens. APA had a pretty rough Ziggs game.
River was kind of owning him.
He was getting pwned quite hard. I think, you know, there's only so much you can do against a Yone Vi. I'm not saying you should never die to it, but you should probably not always die to it either. I think when I was looking at the item choices, I thought, you know, maybe you go with Seraphs this game when you are against a team that is all diving you, right? Yeah. I think that's a totally reasonable choice. Maybe get an early Zhonya's. I'm not exactly sure.
He got Zhonya's. I can't remember if it was second or third, though.
Yeah, he did get it. So I thought, you know, maybe he got punished a little bit more than he could have. But
did you see Licorice's segment on River's game against them? Because Licorice did a kind of cool segment. I don't know if you caught
it. No, I didn't see that one.
Okay, well, he just did one, like, kind of following. He felt like that game was basically like a River 1v9 against TL. And one of the things that he highlighted that was kind of cool was that TL moved to do Herald, and basically 100 Thieves decided, okay, they can't actually contest it. And the expectation was that River would then go cross map and trade. And instead, what River did was, like, River sat in a side brush, like, between APA and the Herald and didn't actually contest it. And he forced his flash really early by doing that. And he felt like that was kind of like the snowball that started it, where, like, they had vision. There was 2-0 over on Herald, but, like, Sniper was pushed in. That was the Riven game where he was way down. So, like, okay, we can't fight this. So River just waited in the side brush and actually caught APA walking over, forced his flash. And then that was kind of started the snowball of his deaths, where then he didn't have flash. He came back mid, ult him, they dive him, they 100-0 him there, and they kind of, like, kept doing that. So it was interesting, like, you know, hearing that perspective of someone who had, like, played with River, because he was, like, super complimentary of River and just felt like River just makes the game easy to play because he has such a good idea of where he should be and what camps he can give up, basically.
Yeah, River's definitely good and played that well. And also, Licorice is also super biased and loves River so much. You could definitely tell.
But it was cool to hear the perspective.
I like that. I like players.
That's what I'm saying. Both are true.
Yeah,
supporting their former teammates. Yeah. I'm sure he would have loved to keep playing with them, but, you know, their team disappeared. Going back to TL, I think their second game against Shopify, it was a win. I feel like that was kind of a loss from Shopify more than a win for TL in the sense that that was one of the worst drafts I've ever seen from Shopify. They played...
There's been two of them.
No, this one was criminally bad.
Oh, no, so, I'm just joking. You're like one of the worst drafts I've ever seen from Shopify. They played two games.
Yeah. No, I mean, one of the worst drafts ever, and it just happened to be from Shopify.
Oh, okay.
Worst out of their two drafts.
Yeah, this is top two worst drafts I've ever seen from the Shopify Rebellion.
Yeah, so they have an almost zero CC team. The only hard CC on their entire team is Nami Bubble, which is not real for the most part. Like, if you're getting hit by a naked Nami Bubble, like, gotta get your hands checked. So you have Rumble, who is someone that synergizes so well with hard CC. You want to layer that equalizer on people who are rooted, stunned, whatever. And they have Rumble, Trundle, Corki, Lucian, Nami. How do you lock anyone down or kill anything? You can't. And we saw every single fight. It's like you throw a pillar up, they walk away. You throw a Rumble ult, they step out of it 1 inch. Yeah. So, you know, I think TL played okay this game, but I feel like it's pretty hard to lose to that draft. Honestly.
Yeah, I kind of saw it as, and I'm really offended because I kind of felt similar to you. I feel like playing with the hard CC when you have some of these champions is really, really hard. But I kind of saw it as they were just trying to play basically as poke, right? Because they're going Stormazer, Rapid Fire, Bloodsong, and they're going Corki with Malignance and whatnot, the Corki poke. And then it's just Trundle just pillaring into poke is kind of like how I saw it. But you can't just win off poke against this composition because TL had Poppy and Udyr in the front line, and then they have Zeri, Lulu, and Azir, right? So it's like they just have these beefy frontliners. It was like a Kanek, Rooker, and Rush from Impact. So he's just like soaking all the poke and kind of just walking at you, and you just kind of just get default outscaled by this comp. So yeah, I agree. The draft didn't really work out well. This wasn't like a hyper impressive game from TL, but also they just kind of like did what they needed to do, right? Yep. They just like sat around and waited till 25 minutes when their champions were stronger than their opponents. And they kind of won. But I guess my concern always with these things, and it is obviously really early, is just like you don't want to see a team defaulting to like slow scale from right off the bat. Like mixing it in is totally fine, but like if they came out week 2 and TL just like drafts like Zeri, Lulu, Azir, Ornn type stuff, for both games this week, I would be concerned, because I do think you need to be flexible and you need to be able to, you know, have confidence that you can like learn these things and improve throughout the split. Otherwise, you're going to be doomed come playoffs, right?
So yeah, like, so you got to save those drafts for playoffs. Dude. Like everyone, I always feel like you have like a certain allowance for your team to play these, like, you know, the meta golem comps, whatever you want to call it, of like all the tanks. Like a support player can only stomach so much Braum per year, and it's like you're gonna catch that out in playoffs and just win the games you need to. So yeah, you doing it first week of the split is not the most inspiring confidence, but you know, sometimes you just need to win.
And I mean, they didn't change too much, except the big difference is bottom lane, right? For game number one, they're playing win bottom lane, and game number two, they're playing we're totally scaling bottom lane. And so that is a big shift. But in this case, I really like the choice. And I know you're saying it's not a problem if you do it one time, and this is a good spot to do it.
But if it's a problem.
Yeah, if it becomes that's your default, and everyone knows how to play against you. In talking to the Team Liquid coaching staff, they're for sure not
planning on it.
You know, not planning on it. Yeah. And this also,
spoilers.
This also is like, oh, you know, they were big fans of playing this aggressive, you know, style that they showed in game number one. So it's understandable to make a change for game number two.
So what about Energy and Dig, the other one-on-one teams? Energy, obviously, I think not the most impressive week one, but also, again, I think people's expectations were somewhat tempered based on the fact that they like came back later. They don't practice as much, blah, blah.
Yeah. I mean, this is definitely another case of what I expected from the team. The Cloud9 one, I thought for sure they were going to lose. I know they
got pretty stomped by Cloud9, though.
They did get pretty stomped by them.
The thing I want to mention is, you know, I think it was a slow start. Everyone's expecting him to ramp up, but I was really impressed by Palafox, especially in their game they won. His Corki was so nuts. Like, he basically started off their advantage by just
such
walking
packages
top
and stuff.
Lane to hover Dokla when he was getting dove, and he just showed up. And if I'm a jungler and I'm diving their top lane and a Corki shows up to counter me, I'm just like, why is he here? Like, that game sense is just registered. That's happening. Realize you can help contribute, even though you're on, you know, a scaling pick. Most people are probably just going to default mid, kill their minions. So I think that kind of game sense, realizing, you know, okay, this isn't my champ's forte, but it's just a really good opportunity. I should go for this. Super smart. I was really impressed by Palafox.
And I love when people don't lose that by when they're changing the style of champions that they're playing, right? Because Palafox, I think, is really good at playing for the team and playing that moving style when he's playing aggressive champs. But like you're saying, no one expects it from a Corki, but there's still those situations where it is a really, really smart play to do. I thought he had some really good packages. I thought he was a monster in the team fights. Like, he was very impressive in that game. It was against Dig, which is, you know, like, obviously that kind of like easier level of competition, but I did think it was a really important win for them to get, because even if you're like, okay, we're expecting to start a little bit slow, blah, 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 whatever. And yeah, sure, you can have that one loss against Cloud9, but you don't want to have a 0-2 first week. Cause I think that can be pretty tough on the confidence.
Yeah. I also think Contracts played super well. Had some really good plays even in their loss. I know Doublelift was trying to give him like MVP of the game that they lost. Like I said, I feel like this is a team still that's on the trajectory that we kind of expected for them, and maybe even will get there quicker than I originally thought, if anything.
What was your read on bot lane, since that's the one thing that changed?
I mean, I could definitely see what people were saying with possible you know, reintegration time, even though FBI and who he has have played together for so long. But it didn't, like, I'm not super worried. I feel like it'll smooth out.
I loved watching this game. I think this was probably my favorite game of the week, was watching Energy versus Dig, just because of the top lane action, dude. Like, watching this game made me be like, I wish there was just no TP in the game. What if every soul lane was just Ignite versus Ignite? Because it's like, they were just going for each other's throat the entire time. There was not a wave that went by where it wasn't them either trying to solo kill each other or their whole team was collapsing. It was just so fun. There was always action. That was awesome. Yeah.
I had a lot of fun casting that one too, because it's like, first the junglers are up there And, you know, in this new Summoner's Rift, people are like, oh, top lane, it's so hard to gank now, but they're spam ganking it, doing the lane ganks that we're looking for. And then the mid laners realize all the kills are up there, and the mid laners start going up there, and then the supports are roaming up there, and we've got fights over the grubs. That is what I want out of, you know, new season craziness and new patch craziness too. So
also some definitely good moments from Dove in that game. He had the
comeback Azir play for the Azir when he got a quadra.
He got a quadra.
Teleport flank behind them.
Yeah, I was a little worried for Energy watching that game because I felt like with Azir being that strong, maybe could have done a bit more. I think he probably pressured himself to go for like a crazy play near the end and the build, you know, maybe could use some workshopping. But I think there was a lot of promise.
I know what you're referencing with the crazy play at the end. Do you feel like he thought he still had ult when he dashed in the second, because it's the Azir play where they're down bottom half of the map and like he ults defensively, but then Azir dashes in melee form. Was he trying to do that?
Are you talking about the one in their base? I'm talking about the one in their base.
Oh, okay.
When they were defending Nexus and people could maybe respawn that one?
Yeah. He had been stabbing, but then he kind of like ran out of mana and then dashed in and died. Yeah. Didn't really get anything done.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in my head, I was thinking, okay, if he just does that standard Azir build, like Nashor's Death Cap, Crit Bloom or Void or whatever, he would have so much damage that it would actually be like really hard for Energy to play. But I think he went a little too weird with the build, like Lich Bane, Zhonya's. I think you just lose too much damage getting that stuff. And then also, Azir is a DPS champion for sure. Like, I think the primary way you want to play him, sit in the back, poke people. Not even poke, but just like do damage, just kill their frontline and whatnot. But I think the fact that you can scoop people in, people get this like, you know, montage vision a little too often. And it's like, there are definitely times where you should do that, but it's not all the time. And you got to know the difference between those times. So,
yeah, especially if you're the most fed person on the team who got the quadra and got all the comeback gold and stuff, then you're going to have to be the one to carry the whole fight, not the initiator.
Yeah, you scoop them all in and then your team's weak as hell. Yeah. And they all just die.
Your team's like, great, we got them. Oh, we're weaker.
Yeah, but it was nice to see like some good moments from him, right? Because that's one of the guys that I think there have been a lot of questions about and a lot of criticism towards. Generally, if you're an import and you're not a known quantity, there's going to be a lot of eyes on you, and people are gonna be really quick to jump on you. What did you think about Dig in general? Because they obviously were another team that went 1-1. I believe they beat Immortals, and then they obviously lost this game against Energy. So they kind of got done what they like needed to get done with the win over Immortals, but like, you know, better, worse than you expected. There was a lot of talk about Fake God. I didn't feel like he had the best week one.
I thought Dig was okay. Mm-hmm. I wasn't super impressed by their play. I did like XU's interviews. I like that he was like, you know, having
his spy game was good.
Yeah, I like his. He was showing some personality. He was getting a little cocky, so that was fun. I think, you know, getting a win, that's good. Beat Immortals, kind of where we expected though, right? Like, I don't think they're going to be competing for the top spot, but you know, I think they were playing with confidence, and that's a good start.
Yeah, I think the bottom lane too, there were some preseason hopes that this bottom lane is going to be super aggressive and, you know,
be a possible
win con for them. And I still feel like that is true, you know, splitting the 50-50 here for the game. Obviously, their game versus Energy was the crazy, everyone's always top, spam ganking, and it turned into action-packed away from there, and the bottom lane wasn't the story at all, but for the Immortals game, they seem to lock it down.
Yeah. All right, so we have Shopify and Immortals as the two teams that are 0-2. I feel like these two teams, like their record is the same, but they're very different situations. Shopify obviously had a pretty tough strength of schedule. You know, they played some really difficult teams. And I will say, even though the results weren't the greatest from Shopify, I did like that in none of the games did it feel like they just were rolling over. It felt like they were still trying to make plays, felt like they were still trying to be aggressive, they're trying to make things happen. And so like I'm not super concerned about the fact that they actually went 0-2 this first week, just because of the quality of the teams that they actually lost to, right? They lost to FlyQuest and then they lost to TL. So those are two teams that I had above them in the power rankings anyway. I kind of have, you know, Shopify in this like fifth-ish range, you know, kind of like that sort of area is probably where they could be. Maybe they can go a little bit up or a little bit down from there. But week two, they're going to be playing Immortals, which is obviously a much easier one. And then they have Cloud9, which is a really tough one. So they have a pretty brutal start to their season.
I think I agree where Shopify, they aren't 0-2 in the same way that, you know, they weren't getting rolled. I don't usually like just equating things to draft gap, but they had some rough drafts this week. So they played Lucian both games. Mm-hmm. They drank the Kool-Aid, believed in the Lucian. I mean, I don't know. I think maybe Lucian can be okay, but I think like getting a finished support item and getting 9 gold for melee minions and having first strike and doing 0 sustained damage is probably just not the way to win games. They're also against like Cynephine, as some people call her, in the bot lane the first game. And then, you know, the second game they had that no hard CC comp.
Yeah.
So like the fact that they were putting up a fight at all with these drafts, when I feel like for all intents and purposes, like they could have just rolled over with these comps and I wouldn't even felt that bad either. So, you know, I think they show promise for sure. I think with some better drafts, they will definitely be able to pick up wins against these other teams.
I'm hoping, I'm always excited for Insanity picks, and I'm hoping, I feel like this is one of the teams that would give us like an AD Twisted Fate for this new patch or the Karma Abuse for this new patch. I feel like Insanity will definitely be in there and be a high possibility for one of these, you know, 14.2 big changes.
You should be cooking against Cloud9. Like, you are super underdogs against them, right? So, like, throw out whatever crazy shit you have.
Turtle has a really good Ezreal as well, so they might be able to jump on the
Karma Ezreal,
the new and ADTF. Improved Ezreal chain. Back to the point about B-Boy possibility, though. That I want to keep Turtle in. I thought Turtle, I know I was definitely more pro Lucian than everyone else, but even the people that are anti Lucian were like, "Well, Turtle was pretty good, was quite well, performed quite well with the Lucian too." So, I mean, of course, it's always up to you know, their performances in scrims and that sort of situation. But we talked about last episode about the benefits of like hard committing to one player or like giving one player more confidence. And a longer run than like the week to week unknown.
Yeah, I thought Turtle looked good. I mean, I'm always gonna be a little biased toward him. He was basically the guy who first got me into Cloud9 back in the day. Like, I've known him for a super long time. Great dude, good player. So I'm always gonna be rooting for Turtle.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think they're definitely a team that's not just gonna like be bottom in the standings at all. I think that, you know, obviously I don't know how they're gonna draft. Maybe they cook pretty hard, but yeah, they'll probably have some good ones.
Yeah. All right, well, Immortals, okay.
I was going to transition to Immortals, yeah. Too. I was like, you think Immortals are going to have some good ones?
That's a question. I mean, I would say expectations are pretty low for Immortals. I was kind of disappointed, even with a bit of a low expectation. I will say it was, you know, like, it's the first time playing in a Tier 1 league for Castle's first stage games and stuff. But, you know, one of the things that people were hyping up for him, for me, was his Jax. And I did not think he had a very good Jax game. So that was kind of a little bit disappointing. So he couldn't really, like, at least, like, translate some individual performance there to stage. But they just looked a little bit, like, lost to me. Is one of kind of, like, my biggest concerns. Is it didn't feel like Immortals really had that kind of, like, clear game plan where they're all on the same page. Like, it's one thing to lose, but it's another thing to lose and feel like you weren't really sure how they were supposed to win. You know what I mean? Like, when it doesn't feel like the team is all on the same page, working together, working towards the same goals. Like, that was kind of my biggest concern coming out of week one, watching their games, is like, I don't really know what the goal of this team is. Like, I don't really know who's supposed to be the main carry, who's supposed to be the person you're mostly playing together towards. All right, is this supposed to be different every game? Is it supposed to be based on the situation? Like, what are your kind of like goals as a team? And I was left like feeling pretty like uncertain, I guess, about like how they even want to play.
Yeah, I have a similar feeling. I think that Armeo is a jungler that I have a lot of respect for. I think that his playstyle is similar to Blabber in the way that he does really well on a winning team. If he has winning lanes, like, this guy will be so solid and he'll just do smart plays and win you the game. I think that on a team like this where you don't really have winning lanes, at least not consistently.
You got to be more the river style.
It's tough. You got to find the creative plays, and that can be that's a lot of pressure on a jungler when you know you can't do the normal thing to win. So you start having to make creative plays, take some risks. Maybe they don't pan out. So I think that's probably going to be, you know, a hurdle for him to have to face the split. I think on the bright side, I think Ole looked pretty solid in these Immortal games. His Blitzcrank was really good. He was hitting some nice hooks. And yeah, that's all I really got.
My plan for Immortals is you have to snowball bottom lane to win a game. Because I think that...
You got no faith in Mask and Castle?
Yeah. After these couple of games too, I really feel like you should just double down on tactical. And I, as a jungler, would sacrifice grub timings in order to go for a dive on bottom side. Try and utilize the draw of the grubs to enemy jungle to be up on top side and just force bottom lane dive and try and blow the game open that way. I think you need to take a lot of risks here for Immortals to overcome some of the hurdles that they're coming up against here in the LCS.
Do you guys think that Armeo can actually be that player though? Because I feel like he's been the same like farm prio type player, like you say, for pretty much the whole time I've seen him. Anytime he came up in the LCS, he came up in the LCS, then went back to Academy, came back up. I feel like he's always been more like tank style player, farm, scale, look to team fight. Like I've never felt like I've really remembered any games from him where he's like going for level 2 Jarvan ganks. He's like spam ganking on Lee Sin. Like he just doesn't seem like he does that. And so it's like, it feels like a lot to ask when it's like you sign this player knowing that he's one thing. It's like you sign Impact and you're like, all right, we're going to need you to play Fiora every game. You know what I mean?
I would say as like a defense for Armeo against that point, the beginning of EG last split was really, really good. He was having some like crazy aggressive games. And granted, he did have a strong team at the time.
That's true. He had some really good Vi games and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I remember he had one early Viego game, which was like one of the most 1v9 games I've seen in a while. So, I mean, I know Armeo can do that, but I think it's just going to be like, how well can he gel with his team? Like, how well can they see the game the same way? Because I can say from experience, being a jungler on a team where there's not a lot of like team cohesion, not a lot of trust between teammates and whatnot, it's super weird to play. And so being able to, you know, navigate that situation can be hard.
It's also interesting because I had been hearing from scrims that was actually the imports that were doing really well, and they're like in Mask and Castle, and their bot lane was really, really struggling. So it's interesting because on stage it felt like a little bit of the inverse. Like how have you ever dealt with that in any of the teams that you played on Meteos where it was like, you know, like the opposite of scrims is kind of happening on stage? And like, how would you navigate that? Because it's like, if Mask and Castle are clearly the best players every game in scrims, and like you play way more scrims than you do on stage, and Tactical and LA are struggling in scrims but are doing well on stage, it's like, do you change the game plan? Do you default to doing like what you've seen so many more times work in scrims?
I haven't had too much of that because I'm sure a lot of my former teammates could attest that I'm like pretty strict on trying to play scrims like stage matches. Like I'll definitely get upset at my teammates if they're doing stuff that I know they would never do on stage, or if they're like showing up for scrims like tired or without eating or without coffee or anything. So like I'm pretty strict on that kind of stuff, like, you know, try to keep our scrims as close to stage games as possible. Every once in a while, you know, there will be players who get nervous on stage, like they don't go for things they would otherwise, and I don't know, you just kind of like try to gotta make him feel comfortable and whatnot. But I haven't had any situation of like, you know, a scrim god teammate who's just like the biggest choker on stage.
Yeah, well, it is going to be tough. But I think that is going to be about it for us. So we're going to wrap it up here. And remember, if you're watching on YouTube, hit that subscribe button so you do not miss an episode of The Dive. You can also check us out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Anchor.fm. And send us your questions on Twitter. Use the hashtag TheDiveLOL. That's where we're going to be pulling questions for throughout this season. LCS Spring Split continues Saturday, January 27th at 12 p.m. noon Pacific. It is going to be Cloud9 versus Dignitas. We'll see you there.